Looks like, nope, won't go on again. Okay, well, we are, this morning, I am continuing what I started last week, and also it's kind of an introduction to the weeks that are coming. Talked a bit about last week the truth versus the lie. You know, the Romans chapter 1 talks an awful, writes about that. Paul says that, you know, in the past, people who knew God didn't want to know God. They wanted, you know, to create God in the way they wanted to make him. They wanted to, you know, make God in their image or the image of other creatures. They basically wanted to, they wanted a God the way they wanted God to be. In fact, you still see that today. People are always kind of judging whether God is, you know, I don't know if I like God's, you know, advice on this. Don't think God's advice on that is good. And people question God's, what they like or don't like about scriptures and what's read in there. And the reality is that his ways are so far above our ways, we can't really begin to judge him. We can't begin to understand what it's like to create a whole universe. And we can't even, you know, create, you know, nice communities all the time that we live in. But, you know, our goal here is to try and follow a way of life in this world that pleases God. You know, the passage that I reminded us last week of, where that we read in a couple weeks ago in our Acts class about Paul talking to the people on Mars Hill and urging them to learn about the God they did not know. And he tells them that all that God had been doing amongst the nations was done so that people would seek after him. They would grope for him and find him. And that word grope, it really does imply the idea that you're kind of hunting because you can't see very well. It's kind of, and really if we think about prior to the preaching of, you know, Christ and the gospel, that the preaching wasn't done all over the world. There are people all over the world who were still searching for some meaning of life. They were still searching for some God that would explain why they were here and where they were going. People have been thinking about those things, you know, where they come from and where we're going in eternity. They've been thinking about those for all time. In fact, I watched an hour special yesterday on the Mayans. A guy searching for a Mayan, I don't know what to call it was, but basically some statues carved into a mountain way in the South Pacific. To have gotten there from really southern Mexico would have been an unbelievable feat. But it all talks about the idea of the end of the world. You know, the movie came out this last year of 2012. The Mayans predicted the end of the world on December 21st of 2012. That's the end of, you know, time, and they're looking for, you know, their kings and things will sit and try and watch the, you know, lunar eclipse or the solar eclipse, you know, on that date. I was thinking about the whole ancient society, the Mayans who simply disappeared and gave up their cities and walked away from them. But they were interested in where were they going after this world? You know, how do we get there? Well, God has told us that everything he's done from, you know, when he made the world and he made all man from one blood, he gave everybody life, breath, and all things. And he did that, and he also pre-appointed the times and places of all of our dwellings so that we would seek him, so that we would try and find him. And that's one of the great promises. He says, if you seek him, you'll find him. Now, I also talked a bit last week about, you know, read from Romans 1 there, the truth versus giving up the truth and taking on the lie. You know, Jesus says that he came to testify of the truth when he was before Pontius Pilate. We made mention, or we talked about it a little bit this last week, I think in our class, and I made mention of the fact that Pilate, when he was searching for truth, I might even mention it last week, but Pilate asked a rhetorical question, what is truth? He didn't really seek after truth. He just, you know, when Jesus told him, I came to testify of the truth, he's like, what is truth? And he walked out. He was making a statement that truth's unknowable. Can't find it. Here's a guy saying, I've come to testify and tell you of the truth. And he says, oh, what's truth? And walks away. That's a statement. That's not seeking. And a lot of times people do that. You know, they sometimes say they're seeking. I can remember back to even myself, you know, before I was, you know, a Christian, and especially to religious people, you know, who, you know, you should go to church, you know, I love to throw out questions that they had trouble answering. Sound like deep questions, hard questions. But I knew they didn't have an answer. I didn't have an answer. But I didn't need an answer because I wasn't really seeking after God. They were the ones who get upset by the questions because they were seeking for God. So, but he tells us that he wants us to know the truth. He tells us the truth can set us free. But he also warns us, as Paul's, you know, wrote in 2 Thessalonians 2, I talked about that passage that I find strange. But it says, God says he will send a strong delusion to those who don't receive the love of the truth so that they will believe the lie. Wow. If my motivations are not pure to really know and to grab on to what's true, then I can easily be tricked by things that look like they might be true. Because think about what a strong delusion is. A delusion is something that you think's true. And it even seems like it's true. And there may be even some evidence to it unless you really examine it. Think about it. It's like a lot of old scientific theories that people used to believe. People used to believe, I don't know how far back it goes, but you go back 100 years or so, that the concepts of cells in the body and everything else was becoming known. But we couldn't see very small. And so the common cell theory was that at the very basic level, every cell was exactly the same. Now that was what they thought. They had some evidence for that, but it isn't true. Then kind of what I'm trying to get to see, that God says that there will be things in this world that can fool us and that really are hard to figure out unless you're seeking after truth. And if you don't have a love of truth, you can get caught by the delusions. Now, he also tells us that we really need to figure out what is good and evil in this world, and that we need to be able to grow in the Word and be able to chew on the difficult things of the Word so that we can grow to learn what is good and evil. Have our senses exercised to discern good and evil, as he says in Hebrews 5:14. But so trying to figure out, you know, when I was thinking of an example earlier, and you know, there are times, everybody, we've all heard, it's kind of in the last generation, you know, the idea of enabling has become a very popular, you know, psychology word. And people who, you know, thought they were helping realize, oh man, I'm just helping the person keep going in this terrible way of life. But you think about it. The person who is enabling, their intentions are not to hurt. Their intentions aren't to, you know, make somebody's life worse. But it seems like when they come to them and they need help, you go, oh, well, I love them so much. I've got to help them. Hard to find. Sometimes, though, it's hard to know what help is that's necessary. That's how we end up doing those things. And usually almost everybody I've known, and myself included, who does that, and it's because we wanted to help and we didn't really know what was good and what wasn't good to help. Well, hopefully when we take the Word of God and we chew on it enough and we grow in it enough and we use the wisdom of other people and counselors and others with wisdom, that we can learn what's good and what's bad in life. That's what God wants us to do, to figure out. Because, you know, when somebody... My mom said years ago, we were talking about the Bible. We were talking about, it's like, well, you know, I do it. I take my guidance from the Word of God. And she used some statement, you know, like I would have used years ago, but a statement that said something, I won't even get it exactly right, but she's saying, well, you know, the Bible doesn't say anything about a checkbook, so how can you, you know, use a checkbook? Well, she doesn't understand. The Bible does say an awful lot about a checkbook, but it doesn't use the word checkbook. They didn't have checks like we have them. But checks are just another form of currency. The principles of how to use currency and how to use your funds hasn't changed. And it doesn't change from society to society. The currency changes. You know, when currency was, you know, so I'm going to give you so many chickens for your, you know, crop, it's still currency. But the principles don't change. And we have to be able to figure that out too. It becomes simplistic for people to think, you know, the scriptures, how could the scriptures apply to every society and every place in the world if it wasn't written in ways that give you basic principles that we have to figure out a way to apply to our society and our time? Otherwise, God would have needed a new one for every generation or two. Sometimes we kind of wish that'd be nice. God gave us a new revelation. Every time new stuff comes into the world, you're like, oh, should I use this? Should I not use it? Is it good or bad? Boy, it'd be nice to have God's opinion on that. But then I guess we wouldn't do what God really wants us, and that's for us to seek truth, to seek after Him. That really is what God wants us to do. Now, see, it's only 20 after still. And so that's just kind of going back over what we talked about last week. You know, I reminded us of 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. Talks about all Scripture, you know, being inspired of God, God-breathed, you know, profitable for the doctrine, for reproof, for instruction in righteousness, so that we can be completely equipped or trained to do every good thing. And the problem is, when we think, well, the Bible doesn't mention that. I remember back when I was a pretty new Christian. I was my, you know, early mid-20s, and I was asked to kind of lead a teenager's class there back in California. And it was mostly girls. There was like one boy or two, but they were saying, you know, things like, Bible doesn't, you know, give me any advice on who to marry, or how to get married. That's what you think? I was really surprised by that point of view. That, you know, and I hadn't really researched it. I hadn't done any of that. And like, I mean, I was probably only been a Christian a couple years or so, but I was kind of surprised by the perspective that Bible doesn't talk about it. And especially some of the girls have mentioned, well, yeah, I know, but Jesus says these things, but you know, Jesus was a man, so that doesn't apply to me. And I was kind of stunned. We actually ended up studying it later after I had a chance to think it through and study it myself. But like, you know, I think there's probably something in there about it, but we just have to kind of search. But I thought, well, if you have that perspective that the Bible doesn't give you every answer, you partially hindering yourself from figuring out how to do everything He wants. You've kind of limited yourself. You say, well, I'm only going to do this. And what you've said is, on these other things, I'm just going to use my own judgment, not going to look towards God for these things. Again, I think there's a problem of the understanding. So I asked the question last week, or I kind of ended last week with the, what if a young person, or, you know, a newer Christian, or just somebody kind of just committing themselves to the Scriptures and they haven't really very much in the past, say, well, you know, it's great that all the Scriptures guide me, but, you know, it's kind of hard to learn all the Scriptures all at once, isn't it? In fact, it takes a lot of years just to study all the Scriptures one time. And the first time you study it, you're not even getting everything out of it. I mean, some things that I have taught, I'm now teaching for I don't know how many years it's been now. But some things I'm teaching for maybe the fourth time. And I'm still getting stuff out of it that I never saw before. Or at least it didn't stick. Maybe I heard it. Maybe somebody said it. Maybe, but it didn't stick with me. And so you read it again. Always getting something new. It's just growing. And so, but you say, okay, where would I start then? And my advice is this. You need to make the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes become second nature to you. Young people. In fact, if you look at the book of Proverbs, you'll find most of them are Solomon's, and he starts many off with my son. The book of Proverbs is a father talking to his child. And if we think about it and say, okay, this is inspired of God, so really the father is God, and we are his children. These are, if you look at the two books too, especially here are two books in the Old Testament that don't talk about the law of Moses. Now they mention the law sometimes, but it isn't gearing everybody towards the law of Moses. It would apply to the law of Moses, but these are principles that apply to life in every place. They apply everywhere. And the God of creation is the one who knows that because he made us. And so, and the book of Ecclesiastes as well, again, another book generally thought of by Solomon towards the end of his life, who, you know, searched for wisdom and searched for purpose in all kinds of ways and discovered all the mistakes he had made. Well, it's written for us to not make all those same mistakes again. We don't want to make those. If we understand the book of Ecclesiastes well, we can say, boy, you know, I'm going to devote myself to wisdom. Oh, that's going to really be the whole purpose of life for me. Well, Solomon answers that for you. He says, it's just not going to fulfill your purpose. Well, I'm going to look for it in pleasure. Or I'm going to look for it in, you know, you name it. Solomon looked for it. And in the book, those two books, and one of the pieces of advice I always give about the book of Proverbs is Proverbs is so neat because you have 31 chapters, and about half of the year we have 31 days. So no matter which ones you've missed, all you have to do is read the date. Read the chapter in the book of Proverbs that is the date of the month. And you'll hit 31 every other month. February, you might miss a couple, but in general, you're going to hit, especially all the ones of Solomon, because the last, you know, couple there, 29, 30, 31, really are the words of Lemuel and Augur. But you're going to hit and understand the Proverbs. And I'm going to actually, one of the reasons I was doing this is to introduce, I'm going to start looking at some of the topics that Proverbs talks about. And the multivaried topics that the book of Proverbs. I could preach just topically through the book of Proverbs for probably 2 years. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to do that. but I could do that. That's how many topics the book of Proverbs comes up with. It's like, for example, I remember a friend of mine years ago, a little bit older than me, he had a daughter who at the time was like 17, but she'd already married a young man, and this friend of mine had, co-signed for them on their car. Well, it became a big mess. Co-signing on the car, they couldn't keep making the payments. Mom and dad couldn't make the payments. And now mom and dad, they're coming after mom and dad. And so it became quite a mess. And parents to son-in-law, it became a very big mess. Spilled over in the church. I mean, you know, people accuse, all kinds of stuff. Ugly. And it started, and the scriptures actually talk about, Proverbs actually mention about what's called, it's called surety. Giving surety for another. Unwise thing to do. If a bank has told somebody, I won't give you surety, then for others to say to somebody, I'll do it for you, The only real way you should do that is if you could afford to give all that money. If you can't afford to make the payments for them, or you really don't have the money to be surety for them. But now, and so those scriptures are there. Now, I remember when it came up and, you know, and somebody asked them, well, you know, thought maybe this wasn't the greatest idea. You ever read this proverb? And they had never read that proverb. Never had that concept in their head. That maybe, you know, basically promising some for someone else that what they'll do isn't a very good thing to do. It's an unwise thing to do. Now, anyways, we're going to look at here, I want to look at really the introductions to each book. Now, the other thing about each book that I think is really somewhat unique is that both books essentially ignore heaven. In fact, in the book of Ecclesiastes, he very pointedly says, I'm only going to look at things under the sun. I'm not interested if it's not under the sun. His point is, I'm looking about life under the sun. In the book of Proverbs, again, you don't see, if you search the book of the word heaven, it seems like in some translations it might occur once, but, and maybe there's a little bit of a couple of Proverbs that might hint at it a little bit, but it's not talking so much about life. It's talking about how to live well here and now. That's what the advice is. It's a father's advice to a child saying, here's the best way to live here and now. And so if you can learn those things and become and really know them well, if you would just spend an entire year reading through the book of Proverbs, you know, reading book that chapter of Proverbs every day for a whole year, you would have actually a very good idea of how to make decisions. Now, let's look at the, I want to look at just the first couple of chapters of each book. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 1. Now, he tells us the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Now, we know, actually, it tells us that Solomon actually wrote, oh, I can't remember what the number says, but there is a mention of it. Solomon wrote thousands of Proverbs, actually lots more than are in the book of Proverbs. But this is what has been recorded for us. And so here they are, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. This is the reasons, he's giving us the very beginning here, the reasons for the Proverbs. It's so we can know wisdom. He is giving us wisdom. We do this all the time. You know, Benjamin Franklin created Proverbs. Most of you, in fact, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who, you know, said, spare the rod, spoil the child. I think that was a Franklin proverb. I can't remember. But it's not a biblical one. Scriptures don't, that's not a proverb that comes from Scripture. The Scriptures actually say, if you spare the rod, you hate your child. You know, spare the rod, spoil the child is really a human proverb, and there's lots of others. They come up with our societies, and we come up with these little sayings. They're truisms. They're not true. They're not 100% right all the time, but they're general principles that apply most of the time. That doesn't mean there's not an exception here or there, you know. But these are wisdom. The purpose of the Proverbs is that you could know wisdom. And instruction, that you could be instructed. He says that you would be able to perceive or discern the words of understanding. The Proverbs, he says, if you can learn what these are mean, you would be able to figure out and discern words of understanding. He says also to help you receive instruction. There's an awful lot of Proverbs that teach us how to listen. You know, that when we should listen and who we should listen to. and who we shouldn't listen to. Awful lot he has to say about listening and being able to receive instruction. He says to give prudence to the simple. Now, I know if I were to say, who wants to be a prude? The majority of people would not answer, oh, I want to be a prude. Let me be a prude. Because the word prude just doesn't have a good context. But the word prudence is the same idea. If you're prudent, you're a prude. But we don't like that word. Because the word has been used to put people down. And it basically has been used to put people down from a world's perspective towards people who are saying, that's not right. I'm not going to live that way. That's a prude. And you know what? You need to learn to glory in being a prude. I know you don't like it. You don't like the, nobody wants to use have that word used about them. But if it is used about you, you ought to take it. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And for some reason, I don't know, my context, it seems like it's used towards women more than men. People don't. But it isn't a word that has a means that women should and men shouldn't. In fact, it means that we both should. We both should be prudent people. That's what the purpose of Proverbs are. Now, he says, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. Discretion is that, you know, that discerning. The purpose of the Proverbs is to give you and help you understand judgment. Oh, when is something good or not good to do? And you know, even every parent even knows there are still things that come up in life that we have a tough time. Should I or shouldn't I? Is it a good thing to do or isn't it a good thing to do? We all have that. All the time. Life is just full of those kinds of dilemmas or decisions. And the purpose of Proverbs is to help us figure that out. To give us the principles upon which to make decisions. Okay? He says, a wise man will hear and increase learning. So he says, if you're wise already, you're going to hear the Proverbs and you're going to be even smarter. And he says, a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. You're going to acquire wise counsel. What do people say? If you have to go to court, people and the court should itself advise you to find a good lawyer or counsel. Even lawyers are advised to find another counsel. Don't be your own counsel. Acquire wise counsel. That is in part what the Proverbs are trying to do for us. But it's also teaching us to do that. When we go through the book of Proverbs, if you were to learn everything the book of Proverbs says, you're not going to come at the end of it and go, boy, I've known everything. I don't need anybody else's help. Because that's not at all what the book of Proverbs would teach you. It would teach you, if you could all of a sudden know it, it would teach you, I need the advice of other people. Because it says that over and over again. Now, he says, to understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. Things that are enigmas, things that are hard to figure out. Things that are a riddle, that are tough, tricky. The purpose of the Proverbs is to be able to figure those kinds of things out. And then he says, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. So he says having a healthy understanding and fear and respect for God and who He is and what He has done and His role as creator, His role as judge, gives us the foundation we begin to learn godly in a godly way. But if we're a fool, we're going to go, I don't want to learn that stuff. Because that's what fools do, he tells us. I don't want to learn. And now, you may not say those words, I don't want to learn. But a lot of people have said they didn't want to learn stuff without saying the words, right? You don't really read, you don't really listen, you don't really study, you make no effort. In fact, reality, one of the things that education has figured out, well, for the most part, is that you can only really educate somebody who's motivated to learn. Somebody who has no motivation to learn, now, whatever motivates them, maybe family, could be a job, could be all kinds of things. But if you're not motivated to listen and figure it out, maybe it's just because you need that grade, because if you don't get that grade, you're in trouble. But if you don't have a motivation to learn, it doesn't matter how good the teachers are. And the other converse of that too, if you're really motivated to learn, it doesn't matter how bad teachers might be isn't as big a factor either. The much bigger factor is whether you're motivated to learn. And if you look at all the school systems, we want to find good schools and all that, but it's, there are people, and I went to a high school in California that we were real proud. I remember I was real proud as a sophomore because our school had gotten, a $1 million grant or something because we were one of the 10 worst in the state. Wow, that was that tremendous. Real pride there, isn't it? But you know what? I know a lot of smart people that came out of that school. I know some who are, I know a guy who looked like the biggest fool you'd ever seen in school and who scored 1600 on the SATs. Before there was practice SAT tests. Before people trained to take them. That's how smart he was. I know a guy who now is an executive at a top Fortune 500 company out of that school. Now, there may not be as many from that school as there could be in other schools, but the reality is, it isn't. It really comes down to you. No matter where you are, whatever circumstances you find yourself in, you can either flourish or sink. And your motivation to learn, that's the idea, I think, behind the book of Proverbs. He's trying to get us to understand. We don't want to be that person who despises instruction or wisdom or learning. We need to be people who want to learn. And if we're, because we generally always make the concept, if we had the best circumstances, then everything would work out right. Nobody has all the best circumstances. Just doesn't exist in the world. Nobody gets everything handed to them, and even when they do, what happens? When everything is handed on a silver platter, what happens? Usually, that isn't really a recipe for motivation and for working hard, to be given everything. Nobody gets everything. Whatever our circumstances are, we can please God. Whatever our circumstances are, we can walk godly. That's really what we all need to understand. Now, let's look at the next verse. He actually says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck." The Proverbs are also telling you to listen to your parents. Now, they're not always right. There are times shouldn't listen to them. But your parents are motivated to give you the best advice they can. And there will be very few people ever in your life with as pure a motivation towards you as your parents. We need to remember that. Now, let's look at the first chapter, or first, 13 verses of Ecclesiastes. And again, just kind of the beginning here of what the book is about. What is he trying to tell us? The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That must mean a little white desk with a nice little mirror on it. That's what we call vanities, but no, that's not what he's saying. He says, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? What good comes out of the work you do? And he's not saying your job. When he talks about your toiling under the sun, he's talking about everything you do, you know, all the work, you know, you go cut your grass once a week, you know, after winter's over. I mean, just all the things we do in life, preparing our food, you know, and sometimes I know with cutting grass, which thing I do not like to do, but I always cut it. It's like a few days later, it's like, it needs it again. It feels to me, cutting grass is to me like when I stock shelves at night for a grocery store, you know, in college. You know, you put a bunch of stuff up on the shelves, you come back the next night and it's empty again and you put more stuff on the shelf. It just doesn't seem like great purpose to it. It just feels like, you know, it's like the wheel just keeps on turning. And so that's in somewhat what he's saying. He says, you know, you do these things and it's like they just have to keep getting done again. You never get to finish something and it's done. Doesn't work that way, unfortunately. A lot of us would like to really accomplish something and wow, that's the best that ever happened. Nobody else even has to work on it anymore. It's so perfect. Kind of like website, you know. I remember when Gina and others had worked on it, you know, a few years back, you know, it was good, and then we didn't keep working at it, and pretty soon, you know, the directory is 4 years old, and that wasn't any problem with the original work. It's just it has to keep being updated, you know, which reminds me, keep looking at that website. Check every link you can because there are hundreds of links in that website, many hundreds of links between all the Bible studies and sermons and the member directories. And I'm pretty sure some things in the member directories aren't right, but, you know, and there are probably people missing, but it's our most current one I just copied in there. So I do want you to just kind of check it all out, especially, you know, it's the reason you kind of put out a beta version is to have a lot of different people with lots of different computers testing it and making sure it's working right. So let me know. Anyway, so he's talking about, you know, that's his question. What good is this? What is the point of all of this that we do? He says, one generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. He says, you know, the earth's always here. God's always there. He said, but notice he leaves God out because he's not taking into consideration heaven or heavenly things. He's really just looking at this earth. And he says, the sun also rises and the sun goes down. It hastens to the place where it rose. So the sun goes up and it goes down. And then it comes up again and it goes down again. And it goes up again and it goes down again. That's what the sun does. Occasionally something gets in front of the sun. We call it an eclipse. And then it does it all over again. And then the Venus eclipse or something I was reading about here yesterday happens every like 540 years. That's Mayan calendars apparently was based upon or something. So, but that's what it does. He says, the wind goes toward the south and it turns around to the north and then the wind whirls around continually. So it's like, yeah, we got the wind coming this way and then a little while later it's coming this way and then it comes and then it stops for a little while and then it starts all over again. That's what wind does. He comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea. Well, you think the seas would get full. But no. He says that the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. So where do the rivers come? You know, the mountains and all that snowpack, and you know, it all flows down. And how does it get back up there again? Well, we know now. We know the scientific way that all happens. We can, you know, your kids in school and science can all, you know, tell you exactly how that takes place. But he's not worried about the science of it. He says it's just a big cycle that just keeps going again. And it's like a treadmill. Just, you're on the treadmill. It doesn't stop for anybody. You know, sometimes you fall and people just kind of trample you. But it's just, life is like this treadmill, and it seems like, what's the point? Now, he says, all things are full of labor. Okay? And the idea is they're tiring. Everything is tiring. Even at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, he tells us, you know, we were talking about how good it is to study and to read and to know the Word of God, and yet he tells us at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes that much studying is weary to the soul. That if all you ever did was study, well, it's not really the goal. The goal isn't just to study. That's just part of it. That just is the training to do the other things. But he says, it's all full of weariness. He says, men cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing. Now, I was, the example I heard before and used all the time is, how many of us have seen the last beautiful sunset? I never want to need to see another one. Don't want to see another one. Somebody comes and says, look at this sunset. It's incredible. I've seen beautiful sunsets before. It's not never enough, is it? It isn't. When we've had something good, we want it again. He says, the ear is not filled with hearing. You hear something beautiful, you know, you hear a symphony, or you hear, you know, some music, and you go, wow, that's magnificent. I never want to hear anything else again. Just poke my ears out. Well, no. It makes us want to hear it again, doesn't it? Because we're never satisfied. And so, he says, that which has been is what will be. You know, one of the statements that teachers sometimes make, and I remember hearing it back when I was in school as well, you know, it's this little statement of an older gentleman complaining about the new generation. And what they're doing and all the things they do, and they don't listen and they don't follow and they don't do it. And then at the end they tell you, well, this was written 2,000 years ago by Plato. Plato complained about generation following him. And reality is, every generation complains about the generation that follows them. You know, someday kids who are going, man, I can't believe they're just so hard on me. Someday you'll complain about the generation that comes after you. This what comes, you know, what has happened is going to happen again. It is the way of life. You know, he says, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. You know, we always think, I was thinking about it, and I kind of followed some of the blog notes of the iPad unveiling this last week. and I thought to myself, well, actually I read it, I guess, first, but it's like, well, you know, it looks kind of like a big phone and does a lot of stuff that other things do and puts it into a new thing. But nothing's really new that it does. You're going to still view stuff, right? The way other people have viewed stuff. You're still going to listen to stuff that other people have listened to. You're still, you know, you're not going to really type too much stuff because you can't really send it out anyplace. But you're going to, you know, what you do on it has been done before. It's just been repackaged into something that is trying to urge you to spend $500. Now, maybe it works and maybe it'll be a tool for you. And that's good. That's fine. But it's a tool that does the same kinds of things that you do without those tools. People did without the tools. Maybe it took longer. I sometimes think, I read some of the commentators, people who have written about the Bible and done all kinds of, you know, studying on the Bible, and I think, I mean, guys who from 50, 100 years ago, and I think how hard it was for them to study the Bible. I mean, it was. You had to go to Bible. You had to open a lot of different books. I mean, I can search, like, 3,000 books, and it takes about 5 minutes. I could search a word or a phrase, and I have thousands and thousands of books in my library on my computer. It almost feels like cheating. I'm not going to stop using the tool, though. But it's exactly the same feeling I had when I was doing construction. And I can remember sitting under somebody's house in a crawl space, digging with a shovel and a pick by hand. And then when I got a little mini spade bit into, you know, you hear those big on the concrete, you know, people out, you know, using the jackhammer, you know, taking up concrete and taking up the asphalt. Well, it's a little mini version of a jackhammer. Did I want to go back to a shovel and a pick? No. But it's still the same work. The same work still gets done. And that's what the idea. There's nothing new under the sun. And if we remember that, we can kind of not get caught up in the hype about things. Now, the new things come and new tools are developed all the time. And that's not nothing wrong with it. But we're still doing the same things we've always needed to do. Now, he says, is there anything of which may be said, see, this is new. It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance. In fact, yesterday about the Mayan thing, the guy was talking about a Mayan temple that is, you know, 1,000 years old or so, and it's stucco. The stucco on it is still perfect. And it's been through torrential, and it's in a place of torrential rain all the time. We don't make stucco that good now. The stucco on these building, on the walls in this building are not going to withstand 1,000 years of, you know, with no care. Things have always been around. But he says, there's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come, but those who will come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. Okay? The word exercise really is afflicted. Remember the story of Adam and Eve when they said he kicked them out? What did he say? Did he say, oh, I'm going to kick you out into a better place? No. I'm going to kick you out in a place that's going to be tough. That's the world we live in. We live in a world that is going to be tough. There are thorns that we are going to work through in this life. And that's just, this is kind of the reason he wrote it. And so I'm going to stop there. Appreciate your thoughts. And I hope it gave you some motivation to think about, you know, really reading through the Proverbs regularly. And if you could do that this year, I think you would have done a very good job in training yourself to be able to make decisions in life. We're going to close by singing 400. So if you open up there, we'll sing that as we close this morning. If you're in need of anything, if you need to answer, you know, to come to Christ or to confess, you know, anything, please don't hesitate to come and that we might help you, that we might serve you. If there's anything we can do for you, please let us know. Together we stand and sing.